Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Robert Washburn, host of Consider This Northumberland. Summer is a time for vacations. It is a chance to get some rest and relaxation. Consider This Northumberland is going to take a break. We will still be on the air each Friday at noon and posting podcasts along with sending out the newsletter. It is important to keep you informed. Instead of new interviews each week, we will be airing some of the best interviews from our ninth season so far. We will return in August in time to gear up for the municipal elections. So I hope you will keep listening. See you then. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Most interviews on Consider This Northumberland are related to politics and institutions. Every now and then, it's nice to feature something a bit different. Something that reflects the community and county life. Here are two interviews done in that spirit. The first is a conversation with Mark Naismith, a veteran of the Royal Canadian Air Force and an addiction recovery coach. He wrote a book called Float, Move, Fight, an addiction recovery guide for military, police, and first responders. Mark is from Grafton, and his mother is a well-known local journalist. The book is based on his experiences transitioning from a military career to a civilian one. This is after he was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, along with facing an addiction. It is a heartfelt story. If you know anyone facing an addiction or someone who is in the military, police, or a first responder, you will want to listen. I'm so pleased to welcome to Consider This Northumberland Mark Naismith, who is a veteran with the Royal Canadian Air Force and an addiction recovery coach. Nice to meet you today.
Thank you, Robert. Nice to meet you.
You have recently released a book on Amazon called Float, Move, Fight, an addiction recovery guide for military, police, and first responders. What is the significance of those three words in the title?
Float, Move, Fight is a naval memory aid, call it. So when a warship goes to sea, it has a mission. The mission is paramount. But a number of things have to happen for the warship to be able to succeed in the mission. It has to fight. In order to fight, it has to move. In order to move, it has to stay afloat. So when the chaos happens, when the damage happens to the ship, they go back to basics. First it's float, then you move, then you fight. And I found that to be a very apt metaphor for being in addiction and recovery. Is beyond all else, I need to float. I need to take care of myself, stay healthy, take care of the essentials of life. When I'm feeling a little better, I need to move. I need to look at what has to be done. How do I get better? What resources are there? Seek out friends, family, healthcare professionals. Inevitably and ultimately, I need to fight, which is action. I need to do the hard work. I need to go see the therapist. I need to go see the doctor. I need to do the exercise, change habits, and all those things. So there really are kind of a sliding scale. And just like at sea, you could be fighting and receive damage, you go back to float. So if I'm having a really bad day, I go back to float. Maybe tomorrow I'll get back to move and fight. But maybe today I just need to float.
You provide a very specific audience in your title. Why did you decide to do this?
I understand from experience and from helping others the mindset of service personnel. And I say that very broadly. I look at it as a spectrum. On one extreme, you have the military, which serve, fight, and sometimes die. But the service mindset extends all the way kind of through the spectrum from police to first responders to 911 operators to prison guards to also nurses, healthcare professionals, And honestly, to parents know what it's like to sacrifice for someone that's not themselves, to have a higher priority than their own well-being. However, the closer you get to the first responders, police, and the military, the more it's about willingly sacrificing part of yourself, your time, your effort, your health to help people who are strangers. And that it's more than a job. It becomes a mission and an internalized, sometimes a calling. And that's why I stuck to those three. But really, I met lots of civilians, never served in the military, never wore a uniform, but they do think like service people. They do consider sacrifice to be a noble cause. So the book speaks to them as well.
Let's go back to the beginning. When you were young, you were involved with the local air cadets. Is that correct?
Correct.
Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, so early on, like as early as age 8, I think I joined the Boy Scouts and Scouts and so on. And I was always really, I still am, I love history, and specifically Canadian history, mostly military, no surprise. And so when I became a teenager, 13, my dad told me about the Royal Canadian Air Cadet Squadron in Cobourg. This sounded like a culmination of all the things I was really into, which is a team with a purpose, a military aspect, and so on. And so I joined it. I stayed there for 5 years, all 5 years of high school back then. Got to see many parts of Canada, and really what I learned was how much I love being in a team environment with a purpose that was beyond ourselves.
You left Northumberland County in 1992. Can you tell us about your military career?
In a nutshell, from 92 to 98 was military college and training for the Air Force. So first in Victoria, then to Winnipeg, and then I graduated from the Royal Military College of Kingston in 1996 and ended up in Halifax on the East Coast for my initial aircraft training on the Sea King helicopters. 13 years of flying on the Sea King helicopters, which, if you're old enough, they're always in the news for all the wrong reasons. But it was amazing. I spent 2 years living on a ship, flying off the ship all around the Caribbean, Northern Europe, Mediterranean, Middle East, doing the missions. Loved it. And then I moved around a little bit, came to Ottawa. I spent 4 years flying on a fighter jet. It's a contracted fighter jet. I was in the back seat. I operated some of the mission systems, and our job was to play the bad guy. We were the adversary. And so we would go around Canada and the US and just give our forces and our allies something to train against. But what I will wrap that up with, though, is my very last posting was as deputy commanding officer of 414 Electronic Warfare Squadron. And it's a flying squadron. That's where the jets fly out of. That was my dream come true. So I got to end on a high note. It's a leadership position. It's hard. It's all the challenge, all the reward, all the time of at that point dealing with all the young kids who are coming up in the military and getting to pass on some of those lessons.
You say in your own literature that you were involved in some difficult missions. Is there anything that you're able to share with us?
I think that's a great way to put it. I'm not going to share many of the details. In 2000, there was a large tanker that sank off the coast of Bermuda. It was a very involved, these things never happen on a good night. So big storms, lots of aircraft, lots of ships. We all did our best. It didn't go well for my crew and for me. And then I mean, it's a case of you do everything right and life gets a vote, and life did not vote in our favor, and it didn't go well. 2 years later, off the coast of Iran, as it turns out, there's another mission, the Straits of Hormuz, the straits that Iran closed right now. Part of our job was to go through there. This is after 9/11, so there was a lot of tension, obviously. As part of a multinational fleet, our job was to go through there and show the flag and demonstrate rite of passage and so on. But that meant the helicopter had to investigate any threat to the ship. We were sent on a mission. Once again, some hard choices had to be made. I had more responsibility at that point, more decision making. I made my decisions. They were all in accordance with rules of engagement, our mission. It was all the best we could do as a crew, and it went really poorly. And so that's all I'm gonna say about that.
For the most part, how would you describe your military career?
I loved it. No doubt. No hesitation. It was a challenge. I got a lot of enjoyment by seeking out more challenges, taking courses that weren't really meant for me, like the escape and evasion course, where you're on the run from the enemy. You learn how to evade and resist interrogation and so on. But really, if I wrap it up in leadership, the chance to lead and be part of a team was just incredible.
When did you first experience post-traumatic stress syndrome or PTSD?
So it started sneaking up on me in 2017. But if I look back for the warning signs, it started in 2000 after that one mission. I knew something was wrong. And for a number of reasons, I can look back and go, yeah, okay, I was already starting to feel it. We're really good. I mean, humans are really good at just ignoring what's wrong. And soldiers will push that stuff down, right? Because we do not want to be weak. We do not want to be vulnerable. I pushed it down so hard that it blew up. So in the space of 2 minutes on one night in 2019, I went from healthy, happy to just injured, fully injured, out of service, seeking help.
For those who may not appreciate how difficult this can be, are you able to share some of your experiences in going through PTSD?
For me, and I know some of my peers, so it's only from the military context, right? That's all I have. But the confidence we had to do our missions, to do our jobs, to walk into any situation and control the chaos is extreme. We can do anything. There's the odd times where we thought we were in danger, we felt scared, we worked through it. The PTSD utterly cuts away, strips away all sense of confidence, all sense of self-reliance, all sense of self-compassion. It cuts right to fear. And that was the first time I'd ever known fear. And it takes a lot of work to get back to a healthy place. So for me, it was fear.
There are a wide range of approaches to recover from an addiction. Which ones did you use, and why did these work for you?
I used as many as I could. And I'm not exaggerating. I said yes to everything because I was scared, because I knew my life was getting away from me. I knew I was in jeopardy of losing my family. I knew at that time I still wanted to get back to the military and I knew I had to get better. But mostly I was scared. So fear is a great motivator. And yeah, it's not a happy one, but it is a great one. And so, yes, there's a couple different angles that anybody can use. One is there's a couple of established recovery programs open to the public. One is a little more rigid but comprehensive. The other is a little more intellectual and open. It just matters what you respond to. So there's the programs, and most people who are successful attend a program. That's because here's the way not to do it, I think, is do it alone. Just don't do it alone. Find friends, find peers, read books, and we'll get to the book, I imagine, in a moment. But a big part of the book is action. You got to take action. You have to do things. So that's the fundamental. You got to get out there and do things.
How did your military training help you in your path to recovery?
So it's the things that made me a great soldier, a great performer. And I absolutely link this back to the police and the first responders and everybody else. The example is self-reliance. We take care of ourselves because we got to take care of ourselves to be part of the team. The team accomplishes the mission, and the mission must get accomplished. We don't complain. We don't tend to look for help. We take care of everything by ourselves. That's the point of pride. Self-reliance includes confidence. I can do anything. Give me a job, I will do it. And then there's always that element of self-sacrifice. And again, down the spectrum, right? We spend long nights away from home. were willing to get injured, risk danger and death in the military. These made me a great performer. So you would think that these strengths would be an asset in addiction recovery and PTSD. I found them counterproductive. I found they hurt me. Because with self-reliance, I do not want to accept help. I don't want to be a drain on the team. I can take care of this myself because I've taken care of everything else myself for the past 27, 28 years. I'm a confident person. Some would say almost arrogant sometimes. but it's because I know what I can do. And so I thought I could handle it. I could handle this PTSD, especially the addiction, on my own. And a soldier has to be ready to be injured. I was injured. Okay, no big deal. Carrying on. We've lost many friends and acquaintances, especially through the Afghanistan years. So I was ready to handle this on my own, especially the addiction part, using the skills that I had as a soldier. And they are counterproductive. I cannot do this alone. I have no confidence. I have no experience. And it's not okay to be injured. You can get help.
If you were to name one person who was critical during this time, who would it be?
I'm going to say Dr. Stewart. He was with me for the past, the last 2.5 years I was in the military. He's a military doctor. It turns out that he and I, we were never serving on the same ships, but we served with the Navy. I was on the air side. He was on the Navy side at the same time. So we had lots of background in common. He was at first, well, he's always supportive, but at first we tried to get me back into sufficient health to keep serving. When that didn't happen, we started looking at options. And when the options weren't working, we looked at my transition out of the military. He was always there. And he would make more time for me than I suspect, you know, he maybe should have compared to other patients, right? And when he switched jobs within the military, he kept seeing me until I was safely out of the military. But I want to be very clear about this. That's just one person. Dozens of people. And at the end of the book, I name a few. Let's make that one person, Dr. Stewart, a representative of the rest.
How would you describe your life now?
Balanced. A big part of recovery from trauma and addiction and I mean, probably many other aspects of life is to find that happy balance. I spend time with my family. I spend time, with fun for myself. I do schoolwork that takes care of that looks towards my future. Every week, I set aside in my schedule concrete time to work on my addiction and trauma, kind of self-work, right? And all those things. So I've found that balance. Whereas when you're in a service job, and again, any number of service jobs, the job is the priority. The mission is the priority, not yourself.
Can you tell us a bit about your family?
Yeah, I met my wife. She, when I was in the Persian Gulf in the Middle East in 2002 as part of the post 9/11 operations, she sent a postcard to the troops. So we got his postcards on the ship. I answered some postcards. We started mailing, and then we met and married later on. I have two children. Both are young adults, I'll say. And I'm very happy about that balance, because between the job and the injury, I lost a lot of time with my children and my family. And the balance helps me to get some of that back.
What brings you the greatest joy these days?
Oh, probably. So joy is a strong word. I'm not sure I really feel joy, to be honest, but I feel contentment and peaceful when I'm just at home and life is happening. It's the way it should be, right?
So when did you decide you wanted to author a book?
Through the self-reflection, finding what worked for me, I realized that I was, all these attributes and characteristics, I wrote like 50 of them. And then I started to look at what I was doing to maintain and solidify my recovery. And I realized I was using military principles, military doctrine, military checklists. I was just repurposing those. And so I started to look at that a little closer. And then I'm doing my volunteer work and kind of trying those out. And I realized that there was a lot there I could package and offer.
Have you ever done anything like this before?
No, not at all.
For those who may not understand what it takes to write a book, what was your process?
I think it was, call it big to small, which again, I approached it like I would approach any mission. What is my mission? What do I want to achieve with the book? Then I look at the component parts as if I want to deliver a message of hope and information, what do I need to do? I need a background. I need to create some credentials. I need to establish that it's not just Mark talking. Mark's using psychological, theorems. He's using military doctrine. And I need positive. I have to deliver something positive. And that's a theme. If I'm not delivering positivity for the purpose of addiction recovery, I just don't think I should do it.
What was the greatest challenge you faced in creating the book?
I think it's, I was going to say, sticking with it. Because, oh, I don't remember that Winston Churchill has a quote about writing a book. And at first, it's like a flowery garden. He loves to walk through it, and it's an exciting, wonderful time. But then it becomes this dragon. And at the end, all you want to do is slay the dragon and move on. And so once I had set everything in my head and put it down on paper, so to speak, the editing, the cleaning it up, that's work. It's a lot of work. So that was, it wasn't saying what I wanted to say, it was making it cohesive.
Who's your publisher?
Amazon. So I did talk to a few people. Wait, that friend from Air Cadets who lives in Ottawa, he is a successful science fiction author. So I talked to him. I talked to a friend who's had some success self-publishing and so on. I just came up with Amazon. It's very straightforward.
What is it like to change careers at this point in your life?
I would ask if I have. I mean, one of the reasons I feel good about the book is because I get to go back to a position of leadership. The idea of standing up when there's chaos or fear and saying, follow me, I love that. And I really respected people who above me would do that when I was in a situation of chaos. And so I do think that I just transitioned out of a uniform, but I'm still trying to help and lead other people to a brighter place.
What was the scariest part of this transition?
So the transition happened, of course, while the addiction and the trauma was getting under control. Things were getting better. But I had this very clear sense of I just spent 31 years in the military and I can never go back to who I was. I just can't. That person is now in the rearview mirror. I'm sitting in a good place. I'm in therapy, trauma recovery, addiction recovery. My life's been getting back on track. But I mean, this isn't my life. This is a transition period. So I can't go back. I can't stay where I am. And I had no idea who I would be. That was a little bit scary.
So where do you go from here? What are the next steps?
For me, it's to finish the master's program and then to find wherever niche I can be most productive with helping people. I assume it'll be military and police and first responders, but life gets a vote. So I don't know what's going to happen 2 years from now. As for the book, I would say that my hope is it gets to people who need it. And if in fact what I wrote does speak to some, military police and first responders, I hope it finds them.
Where can people find your book?
Amazon.ca, and you can use the search bar to search the title, Float, Move, Fight, or my name.
If you could sit down with someone listening who may be struggling with an addiction, what piece of advice would you give them?
You're not alone. No one is alone. There are people, there are resources, there are meetings, there are peers. And the coolest thing I learned about the healthcare side of this is that there are thousands of people. So all they want to do is help you. They've made it their mission in life to be healthcare professionals, to be nurses, doctors, therapists, counselors, volunteers. They're out there and they want to help.
Mark Naismith, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert. I really appreciate it.
That was Mark Naismith, who is a veteran with the Royal Canadian Air Force and an addiction recovery coach. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. Or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.